And you might have seen my article this week in The Echo, because I still write for The Echo every Thursday and love doing it. And this week I talked about suicide. I have several friends who have lost loved ones through suicide, and we've discussed it so many times over the years on this programme. Coronation Street have done a storyline with Aidan, played by Shane Ward, who takes his own life. And what was great about Coronation Street, if you can say the word great, was that it gave both sides to the story. Cheryl's been a friend of mine for many, many years. She was a hairdresser and very successful, great friends. With Audrey, who stayed a lifelong friend, and we were pals, and she went on the ships, and, well, let's say hello to her. Hiya, Cheryl.
Good evening, Pete. How are you?
I'm well, thank you indeed. It's, after all the years, very difficult to talk about, and take your time over this, but why did you say yes to me when I said, can we talk about it now once and for all?
Well, probably because I've never not wanted to talk about it, and I think, you know, it helps me, but it might also help other people, because you drive yourself insane looking for reasons, and sometimes you're not ever going to find them, and 33 years later, I still don't have any reason.
And, of course, the awful thing is, too, you had your lovely supporter, your mum and dad, and who were both listeners of my show, both friends of mine, and you've lost both them as well.
Yeah, you know, it's so sad. So it's, you know, it's brought a lot of memories back. And I told you at one stage I had to turn Coronation Street off, not because they're not doing a great job, but it was the aftermath for me. That's what got to me more so, you know, seeing what their family was going through.
Yeah.
And the anger, and, you know, that brought back so much, and I just stopped, not because it wasn't done so well, but because I couldn't just deal with it.
Yeah, I understand. Cheryl, take as long as you want. Let's start with when we first met, and you were working for Herbert.
Indeed, indeed, from a very young age.
Indeed.
And started my apprenticeship with Herbert, and got to know yourself, and Audrey, who's, as you said, is still my lifelong friend, who lives in Holland now. Spent many happy years, you know, working for Herbert, and then graduated, and we went to go and live in Spain, Audrey and I. So,
which is when me and Herbert visited you and partied.
I know.
Boy, did we party!
Exactly, exactly. So yes, and then, you know, we drifted by. My parents moved down to Kent, and I moved down to Kent with them. And then at that time, you were never allowed to go to sea until you reached 25.
Mm-hmm.
And Audrey and I had always wanted to do that, but she was doing other things, and I decided at 25 I would go to sea.
So tell us about meeting your husband. Take as long as you want.
It was probably love at first sight for me, because you know, I saw him come into the officer's bar, and I thought, oh, he's quite nice. And I met John in the November of 1978. And we got married in 1980, so yes, it was a year later, in the October.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing on the ships?
I was hairdressing, so working in the salon on board.
Now tell me where John came from.
John was born in Rotterdam. He was Dutch, and he was a food and beverage manager. Well, he started off as what they call a controller, but it's all to do with the hotel side of the ship and ordering all the produce and all the food that comes on board and everything. So, and he worked his way up to food and beverage manager.
When you were courting, what was he like? What was the relationship like?
He was the opposite to me. He was a runner, a jogger, a health freak, whereas I'm more of a couch potato. Wouldn't run to
And a doggy lover.
And a doggy lover, yes, but I wouldn't run to save my life. But John was the exercise freak. Mm-hmm. And he was a workaholic, there's no doubt about it, and a perfectionist.
So what made the marriage work?
I suppose we were completely different, but he was the love of my life. And as you know, after 33 years, I've never gone to look for anybody else, and I don't think I will ever meet anybody else, because he was, as far as I'm concerned, the love of my life. But he had the same sense of humour. He got on so well with my family and my parents, and because he was dark-haired as opposed to being a blonde Dutchman, everybody thought John was the son and I was the in-law.
All right, wow.
So,
And what was his life like in Holland?
He was one of three children. He was the eldest, and he had to do national service. They always chose one of the sons, and John was the one that went to do national service. And then he went up to Maastricht to go to food and beverage college, and then join the ships.
Now, you were sailing together for how long?
For 5 years.
And this particular time when you lost your husband, you weren't with him, were you?
No, he'd been home for 2 months. He was on an American contract by this time, which meant you worked 4 months on and had 2 months off. So he'd been home for the whole of the summer. My sister and my brother-in-law and my sister's three children, she had three children then, we were all home together. We'd never, ever all been home together. So he was home for 2 months. We'd gone to Holland. We'd gone away. My sister was there. But he was due to go back to the ship on his own. He always did that. He liked to get himself into a routine. He liked to get to know what the job he was doing, what the ship was. So I was never scheduled to go with him until 6 weeks later.
That's interesting. So he was a person that liked his own way of dealing with stuff.
Yes, yes, yeah. And he had a strict routine. You know, he would be up at 6:30 in the morning and, you know, going to his office and doing whatever he needed to do. And so even though I was on the ship with him, you know, we wouldn't see each other every moment of the day because that was his job.
Well, you were both doing a job, so...
Yeah. So.
Now, did you go on the ship as a worker or did you ever go
half? No, because at the time when we got married, you were not allowed to be married to an officer and work for a concession company.
Right.
So I gave up my job. But we were lucky because the company, as wives, we were allowed to sail for 6 months of the year.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So we were able to sail together.
So you were home. And I know you've gone through this a million times, but you were home, and before we ask you to go through the painful story, when he left, what was he like before he went away to sea?
He was fine. My sister and brother-in-law were there. We all had a wonderful time. There was absolutely no sign. He was not a depressive type of guy. He was very much straightforward. If this is what's going to happen, this is how we'll deal with it. We were due to buy a house with my parents because they were going to move to Anglesey. So we'd looked at this property and they'd even put a deposit down.
So he left, you went to bed. Talk us through it.
So he'd been on the ship for 13 days. So I'd spoken to him, obviously, when he got there. Then he phoned my parents. Wedding anniversary is the 9th of August. He phoned from where I think he was up in Alaska. He phoned to wish them a happy anniversary. I think on the 13th of August we spoke to him because he was back in Vancouver. And then on the 17th of August is when he allegedly committed suicide. And that's when we got the call.
Now, you said, and it's the first time you've actually said it to me, allegedly. You don't believe that he commits suicide, do you?
Well, it's a very hard one, Pete. No one wants to believe that somebody that you love would commit suicide. So there's always that part of you. But there are so many things that weren't done correctly, that weren't, which I couldn't even go into now. Mm-hmm. But so one half of me doesn't want to believe it. The other half of me looks at the information that I got, which was very, very sketchy. And so I'll never know to my dying day. And plus, I had to have an inquest here, and I have an open verdict.
So you had an open verdict on
that? Yeah, because nobody had any information. The state troopers didn't go on board. He was shipped off to Alaska, where he went to two funeral homes. They cleansed his body, so when they did the autopsy, the scratches on his neck could not be proved if he did them or somebody else did them. So, I mean, the errors just go on and on. So, you know, it is very hard. But we have an open verdict. What that means is I've just got to live with, like everybody else that's ever gone through this, is there was no note, there were no signs, there was nothing to say. Even the statements from the ships say there was no note, that they went to, they confiscated all his cassettes. At that time, he used cassettes in case there were any messages on there. There was nothing, no signs of why he would do this.
Cheryl, your father took the phone call. Tell us what happened that morning.
It was 11 o'clock at night, probably, because of the time difference, and the ship was up in Alaska. The phone call came through about 11:30, and my father called me downstairs. I'd gone to bed, and he just said to me, "John's dead." And I kept saying, "But how did he die?" And I don't know if anybody else would say that, but for me, I needed to know. And my father kept saying, "I don't know." And actually, he did know. And the ships had told him not to tell me. And they said, no, wait till the captain calls and the hotel manager. So for 3 hours or however many hours it was, while we waited for that ship to call us, I kept rocking back and forward saying, "But if we don't know how he died, how do we know it's him? How do we know it's not, you know, someone else? And did he fall off overboard? Did pallets fall on him? Did he drop down dead because he was a jogger?" And 3 hours later, when they phoned, they still told my father not to tell me. And my father said, "No, enough is enough now. I cannot go through another 3 hours. She needs to know." And so when he told me, that was even more disbelief.
May I ask what happened?
Well, allegedly he hung himself. Well, he did hang himself. We assume from the bathroom door. And if anybody's been on a ship, you know that the bathroom door handle is halfway down the door. So, to me, as a layman, I couldn't understand how you could hang yourself from the middle of the door.
It's interesting you say that, because there's a lady on the Wirral who had the same problem with her husband, and he hung himself from the bathroom door.
Yeah.
Which I could not get my head around at all. And you say that, and it is weird.
Yeah.
It is weird.
You know, anybody listening that's, you know, that upsets, I'm sorry, but for me, if you're going to hang yourself, you're dangling from the top. You're not dangling halfway down the door. So that I couldn't get my head round. So, and the scratch mark on his neck, and he had scratches on his hand. But as I said, Pete, you know, perhaps it's me clutching at straws. I don't know.
You've been incredibly angry about this, haven't you? You haven't been at all the other side. You've been just purely angry.
Yes, yeah. Once you get over the shock, I was just, and I still am, even 33 years later, that, you know, if he did do it, how dare he do it? You know, for me, and that sounds terrible, because if he did do it, there was obviously something not quite right. And, you know, maybe he just felt he couldn't cope. I don't know. But to me, it was, well, why couldn't you have spoken to us if there was something wrong? Why didn't you walk off the ship if you hated the job? But it's easy for me to sit here and say that. If you know, there's no words that you can say that, well, you should have done that, because he's not here now to say it to.
Talking to Cheryl, who is telling us about a painful thing that happened to her 33 years ago. And we did this on the strength of Shane Ward, who played Aidan in Coronation Street, bringing the storyline up yet again. What was amazing about Coronation Street was the anger, and the anger is what Cheryl's got still after 33 years. Cheryl, you do know that all the years I've known you, I still can't pronounce your second name.
Fiolka.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? I just have a mental block. I always have done with you. Your second name. Tell me, when the realization came in and started to hit you that your husband was dead with no reason, how did you cope with your friends and family and his family?
With my family, they were, I couldn't have got through it without them. And I spoke to my aunt, who is a very close friend of my mother's, who was 90 last year. And she told me for the first time that when my mother phoned distraught to tell her, they immediately thought, because my mother just said, John is dead. And they thought, see, my father was called John.
Right.
And they thought it was my dad that had died. Didn't even enter their head that it was my John. And they just came over immediately, dropped everything, and drove over in the middle of the night. Mm. My sister the same. She didn't think that when my father phoned and said it was John that, you know, that they realised it was that John.
Have you kept in touch with his family?
No, sadly not.
For a reason, if you don't mind me asking?
My mother-in-law and I did not get on.
Oh, forget the problems.
So forget the problems.
You just didn't get on.
No. I mean, if I tell you that she literally sobbed all the way through our wedding ceremony.
Oh, you're joking. No. Whoa, you never told me that before. God bless us.
So, and she was very, she never spoke English. She said she didn't speak English, but she could speak enough English to tell me that, you know, her heart was broken that he had married me and gone to move in England. So sadly not, and unfortunately it did not get any better when John died.
She must have taken it then, if that was the case.
Oh,
unbelievably.
Unbelievable. She came back screaming the place down from viewing his body at the funeral home, saying that wasn't her son. Well, sadly, didn't want to believe it, but, you know, sadly in the coffin was her son. And she was just a complete nightmare. And, you know, it then started with what possessions we had and, you know, who had the money and what money. That's what I would like to know. So, sadly, no, his family were not very supportive. I would never have made it through without my family.
That's amazing. Tell me how you felt reading your story in The Echo on Thursday in my column.
Well, first of all, when I saw it online, obviously I read it online first, the photograph. I know I'd sent you the photograph, but to see it on my iPad.
And it's you and John. As young. Was that your bridal photograph?
No. Right. We used to have to host a table for formal nights. So that was just our formal attire. And that took my breath away, just seeing the photograph. You know, I've seen it probably.
After 33 years.
And then reading it and... you did it justice, so thank you very much.
Now you've done it, and you have spoken about it before, but never publicly like this. Are you pleased or sorry you've done it?
No. Delighted is hardly the right word to use, I guess. But no, I'm very pleased to have done it. My sister was concerned about me, and my very close friend Rose, they were concerned, but... I've always been able to talk about it, not necessarily publicly on a radio station, but I've always been able to talk about it. And I don't know, I think for me it's always been a therapy. It's always been being able
Which to people help me. Deal with it in different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
After they've read the story, how do they feel about it?
Oh, they obviously, as I say, then they've all come up with the things that I never knew that they hadn't been able to tell me before.
So it's been a little bit of therapy then?
Yes, yeah, again. And, you know, we've cried sometimes and we've talked about it, and we now have happier times remembering John. And for me, I need these people in my life because they do remember him. You know, sadly, you never got to meet him.
No,
there's
so
many people in my life now that have never met my husband, and yet he's still a big part of my life.
Do you think you'll ever get over the anger?
No. My sister really despairs of me because she just thinks I should let it go. But it's such a hard thing to let go, Pete, because I'm angry because my whole life changed, and that sounds really selfish, but, you know, I live a different life now than I could have done.
Do you think it aged you?
Possibly, yes. I mean, for 2 years I just travelled the world. I was so lucky, but God knows what that did to my parents. But I could not stay home. I was so used to going away. And I was lucky enough to be able to go and stay with friends. But it sounds lovely, but it was purgatory. Why I put myself through it, I shall never know. But I had to do it. Perhaps it made me a stronger person when I came back.
What do you say to people listening now who have been through what you've been through and are going through it right now?
You know, find somebody you can talk to, because, you know, we need to talk about these things, to brush it under the carpet. And that's not in a bad way, but some people can't deal with their feelings. But it's got to help in some way. It certainly helped me, and I do hope it would help them to talk about it and to then laugh and cry and bring it all out. And then, you know, hopefully another day will pass and you will feel a little bit more at peace with yourself.
Is the most painful thing thinking about if he was here now?
Yes.
If we were talking now?
Yeah.
If this was happening now?
Yeah.
He'd love the dogs.
He'd love my nephews, my nieces. You know, they were small when he died. I mean, I think my youngest niece wasn't even born. And, you know, the great times we had with my parents, you know, he'd have been so sad, but he would have been there for me when I lost them.
Cheryl, thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh, thank you, Pete, for having me on. And thank you so much for putting that in the Echo. I'm really pleased.
Thanks, Cheryl.